Changes at United Airlines today after the mess this month with that passenger forcibly pulled off a flight. We'll get the United CEO on the line here. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. United Airlines today announced 10 things it's changing to, quote, improve customer experience. This after the passenger refused to get off the flight to free up seats and was forcibly dragged off by police. The video of that was seen around the world. United now will no longer bring in the police unless it's a safety or security issue. Among its 10 changes today, United will offer up to $10,000 to get people to take a later flight. On the day in question, the upper limit was $900. United will no longer ever ask a passenger to give up a seat involuntarily, again, unless it's a safety or security thing. And there are more changes announced today. I spoke to United's president and CEO, Oscar Munoz, from his office in Chicago. Mr. Munoz, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I think you're about to tell me about what your airline learned from that horrible incident earlier this month. But before we get to that, please tell us what accounts for your initial insensitivity as that mess unfolded.
Let me first say, beyond the events of the day and the responses you suggest, it's broader than that. We had a serious breach of public trust. And again, we continue to be profoundly sorry and apologize to everyone involved. What happened is we let our procedures and policies get in the way of common sense and doing the right thing. To your question with regards to that specific choice of words in response, it was an awful choice of words. It didn't adequately respond to the gravity of the situation. I watched that video. My gut instinct told me to do something different, but I messed up, and I've taken full accountability for that. You know, in hindsight, I think about it every day and how we should have responded better.
So now, after review, United has this list of 10 changes to how it deals with flights and how it deals with the people who fly. I see, for instance, that you now won't call on the cops unless safety or security is an issue.
Well, David, that was it. That was an immediate response. I think I was on TV a couple of weeks ago, and the first decision immediately was to say publicly and to put an internal policy that we would not allow law enforcement on our aircraft unless it was an issue of safety or security. I have to say, I don't know every one of our policies because we have many, but I think most of us, and I certainly was surprised that we had a policy that we would do something like that. So we stopped that immediately.
And now no forcing people already on the plane to get off because they're bumped.
Well, that's the added aspect. Okay, we're not going to have law enforcement come on, but also once you've boarded the aircraft and you're comfortably seated, other than for safety or security reasons, I think we always have to put that caveat in, we're not going to deboard anyone.
Now you're pledging to reduce the amount of overbooking. How about you just don't overbook?
The process of overbooking is a complicated one. It's actually minimal. We, on certain flights, overbook by one or two people. Last year we had, I think, 1 in 23,000 were involuntarily denied boarding. So it's a very small occurrence. And again, as we up the amount to $10,000, if indeed we need to deny boarding to someone, I think that's another incentive for us to, in essence, get to a point, it's an internal goal, where we don't have any involuntary denied boardings in the system.
Because the cutoff on the day in question was like $900, and now you're putting it up to as much as $10,000 to incentivize people to perhaps take a different flight?
That is correct. And I have to tell you, beyond the economics of it, which clearly everyone says, why didn't you just offer more? There was a lot of what ifs. And that's kind of at the root of where our policies and procedures got in the way of, you know, the right thing and common sense. Because not only is the financial remuneration important to someone, even potentially sometimes even more important, it's like, tell me then when I'm going to get to my destination. But again, our internal goal is to get to zero. And one of the drivers behind that is putting a $10,000 sort of giving that empowerment to our gate agents and crews so that they can make the right decision right there on site.
And this is interesting. An automated system for getting volunteers to raise their hand about possibly taking a different flight?
Yeah, and it's something that's done at other airlines, and it's a reverse auction, if you will. If we, for a host of reasons, we had to change aircraft, or we indeed overbooked by a certain amount, or there's whatever of many issues can cause overbooking, we want to let you know as soon as possible, or let the people on that flight know, because if you're just getting to the airport, or even if we do it earlier enough, and you're still at home, and you have the opportunity, and you have flexibility in your plans, we're going to let you call your number. and sort of avoid the issue of having to do it at the gate, and of course, you know, really never having to do it when we've already boarded an aircraft.
Just buying a ticket from you doesn't mean you're guaranteed a seat. This incident has been a wake-up call to passengers that that's kind of the way of the world. Do you need to make it clearer to people that there's always a bit of a roll of the dice about whether you fly or not?
You know, I don't know about making it clear. I think we need to communicate more effectively how we treat you, again, with respect and dignity as a customer. You know, that seems like a very harsh thing to say. I bought something, but I'm not guaranteed. That is something that again, has been put in place well before me, I think, as an industry. But we have to do better than that, right? We can't do that. And so our policies that we've rolled out here for the next today will begin the process of helping in that regard.
Do you think this is a sign that there's been too much consolidation in your industry, that you're now too big to care all that much?
You know, I don't think so. If you fly and you look around today and you see our United family, you see them incredibly motivated and focused on making things right. The incident that we all witnessed was a horrible failure, but it is not who we are as a company. So size, scale, consolidation, all of those things aren't factors. They just make things a little harder sometimes. But we do have to remind ourselves, to your point, that the customer's at the center of all this.
Okay, one last question. This incident with the dragged-off passenger became a worldwide spectacle, in part because everyone agrees it was terrible, but also there was video footage of the incident. Do you welcome passenger videos if it helps you understand that there are shortcomings in your system, or are you inclined to limit videos that passengers can record and then make public?
You know, it is a free world. It is a dynamic of our new day and age. Technology is everywhere. Now, to your point of, you know, do we take those videos and can we witness things? Can they send them to us so that we can learn from those? You know, that happens today. And so, no, I would never limit something, that freedom for anyone.
The entire list of United's changes is at marketplace.org. Oscar Munoz, CEO at United Airlines. Thank you for those.
Thank you, David.
After the Trump administration yesterday signaled that it was drafting an executive order to pull out of NAFTA, there was a flurry in currency markets, and Canada and Mexico got on the phone with the White House. Now the White House has agreed not to withdraw from NAFTA at this time. However, both Canada and Mexico agree that NAFTA could be changed. Today, a report on some leverage Mexico might have in future negotiations, corn, Marketplace's Annie Baxter explains.
After NAFTA opened up the Mexican market, tons of yellow corn from the U.S. flooded in. Bruce Peterson, a corn farmer in Minnesota, says the U.S. producers have some built-in advantages.
There's a reason why we grow a lot of corn in the upper Midwest. We're blessed with quality soils, and typically we get ample rainfall.
Unlike in arid Mexico, where competition with U.S. corn put many farmers out of business, U.S. producers now send about $2.5 billion of corn to Mexico each year. It's their biggest market. Knowing corn is a pressure point for the U.S., some immigrant rights advocates decided to push on it. It's retaliation against President Trump for his harsh rhetoric against immigrants and for his talk of building a border wall and renegotiating NAFTA.
For us, it was a very good opportunity to hit Donald Trump where we believe it will hurt the most, which is his economy.
Luis Avila is a Mexican-born activist in Arizona who helped start a campaign called No Maíz Gringo, that means no American corn. They're petitioning the Mexican government to boycott U.S. corn.
Our campaign is actually asking the Mexican government to not only stop buying corn from the United States, but invest in the production of Mexican corn.
A full boycott seems improbable, but a Mexican senator has introduced a bill calling for similar measures. And the Mexican government is exploring imports from Brazil and Argentina, their big corn-producing countries. And that worries Tom Slate, head of the U.S. Grains Council, a trade group.
Suddenly, politics has come into one of our most reliable markets.
Slate says there's a whole infrastructure built up for getting U.S. corn into Mexico easily, and corn from Latin American competitors comes with import taxes and other costs. But he says that could change.
We've opened up the doors, really, what the problem is. You know, our competitors for U.S. Grain supplies will definitely go through that door and certainly be a lot more aggressive in their pricing.
He says just last year, U.S. corn producers were talking about how to expand their exports to Mexico. Now, they're looking to protect them. In Northfield, Minnesota, I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
And- And Ivanka Trump's clothing line is making news again after being discontinued at Nordstrom and other stores after the election. This week, the company that manufactures and distributes Ivanka apparel revealed it's been switching the tags and selling the stuff at a discount retailer as Adrian Vittadini Studio. Turns out relabeling is common, Marketplace's Aaron Schrank reports.
The switch could have been made for political reasons, but not necessarily. High-end brands often use relabeling to avoid being associated with discount stores, says Chitra DeBoss, who teaches retail management at Cal Poly Pomona.
To take care of their unsold inventory without harming their brand image.
Relabeling is actually legal, as long as all the parties involved are cool with it. And Susan Scafidi at Fordham's Fashion Law Institute says it can pay off for you, the shopper.
Savvy consumers have adored the idea of being able to go into a Century 21, a TJ Maxx, and find things that they cleverly recognize as being from very high-end labels, only without the labels.
But if Ivanka Trump's distributor is swapping tags to get around the boycott, Scafidi says it probably won't work.
The internet allows more or less perfect information. It's much harder to dump unsold product on unsuspecting consumers.
She says maybe the entire system of relabeling needs to be rethought and made more transparent. I'm Aaron Schrank for Marketplace.
So, Adrian Vittadini Studio. What do you think? If Ms. Trump's father changed his name to President Vittadini, would that be an asset or a liability? In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.